No tears. They are a waste of good suffering.
Beam me to your device directly from the Cenobites Labyrinth somewhere in Southern California. It's the Hollywood Horror Nerds, your number one source for news, speculation, and discussion exclusively from Universal Studio Hollywood's Halloween Horror Nights. And now to your hosts, Undead Ed and his co-host, the Demon to some, Alvaro to others. Alright, hello and welcome to the next episode of the Hollywood Horror Nerds. Alvaro, are you glad to be here?
I'm always glad to be here to talk about this. I love Halloween Horror Nights.
We love it enough that we talk about it every month. And actually, we have breaking news to bring you. So we had a very nice plan for this episode. We went to the spooky swap meet in Heritage Park in LA. We got some stuff. We're going to talk about that. We watched a few movies. We're going to review them for you. And then last night, as we settled in to watch An American Werewolf in London, there was breaking Horror Nights news. The Speculation Map version 2 had a surprise drop on Twitter. And we had to pause the movie. We said, this is what we're spending the night doing now. So we went through the new map. We've decoded some symbols. We're still going to bring you all that stuff we did. We're still going to talk about the swap meet. We're going to talk about, we have a nice haul of kind of this Halloween stuff that we got that we're going to talk about. And we're going to talk about the next three movies in our top 20 countdown. But first, we are going to address this new map, and a lot has changed. That was my first impression. What was your first impression seeing this?
My first impression were, oh, there's new symbols here. What the heck?
I think there's one symbol that is the same. No, that's not true. There's two. No,
there's a couple.
There's a few. Okay, there's a few. So let's go through, first of all, what's the same. And even the ones that are the same, a lot of them are in different places. So the Death Eaters are still there. Yes. We still think that's a lock in Harry Potter land. Ghostbusters is still there.
But the location has changed. The location is
different. Where was it before?
Before it was on the...
This is where the Walking Dead attraction was. So this is the permanent black box they have now that is empty during most of the year, but they used to have The Walking Dead there.
Yeah.
And now it's moved to what's called
Soundstage 22.
So Soundstage 22, if you were at the event last year, this is where The Exorcist Believer was last year. And this is an actual soundstage, so they have a little more space. They can do a little more, I think, in terms of effects there if they want to. So it's interesting to see Ghostbusters being put there, because this is a maze where you think you could do a lot with effects. And moving it to a soundstage, I think we might be seeing maybe a bigger Stay Puft, maybe more kind of unique ghost effects. We were talking last night, maybe it would be cool to see a Pepper's Ghost in a Ghostbusters maze. So what do you think? Are you excited for the new location?
I'm excited to see what they're going to bring. If they decide to bring a Giant Puff, I'm going to be very... I'm going to laugh. Not going to lie. I'm going to laugh.
Oh, I'll be terrified. I have a deep, deep-rooted fear of Marshmallow Man. But I do think it's interesting we've seen Ghostbusters on both maps now. It feels like this is edging closer to being confirmed. I know I said on our last episode, I called Ghostbusters would be the first announcement. I'm still holding on to that, especially because there's been rumors that's returning to Orlando in a permanent capacity as well, as an attraction or as a show or something. So I think Ghostbusters, I'm feeling pretty good about that one.
I'm going to be very excited, especially I believe Bill Murray still lives in L.A., so if he ever drops by.
I could see you're in the maze and Bill Murray pops out of a window and says, nobody will believe you, and then returns.
Yes. I
feel like that's something he would do.
That would be something he would do, and no one would believe me.
The second one that we've seen repeat is kind of this mute symbol. It looks like when you have the volume on your TV and you mute it. It's a volume symbol with a slash through.
Yeah.
So definitely some kind of silence. So the two that are, and the one that people are really speculating about, I think the reason why it's turning up on these maps is A Quiet Place still. And just like we said last time we thought of a symbol, I really don't see how that's going to work.
Yeah, especially because it has to be quiet.
And it just will not. It will not be quiet. Even if they try to say there's going to be no sound in the maze until the monster attacks, you'll hear the monster attacking in the next room. You'll hear people talking. There's a lot of this ambient noise. So I just don't think it would be good. It did move locations, didn't it? It used to be in a soundstage, and now it's at the Walking Dead venue.
Yeah, before it was in the Mummy.
So the Walking Dead venue isn't closed. Mummy is a tent, so that would be better if they're trying to do silence. Mm-hmm. I'm still just not sold on this Quiet Place idea. I know it's still heavily speculated, But I haven't really seen any of these prominent leakers haven't been confirming it yet, so I don't know. I think Silent Hill is still in play there. I think that would be a much stronger choice. And we even talked yesterday about Silence of the Lambs, potentially.
Oh, Silence of the Lambs
That would be a big twist.
that would be a
I'd be
big twist.
surprised. But I would be down for that. I would be more, I really, the more I think about it, the less excited I am for The Quiet Place. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, A Quiet Place is a nice movie. It wouldn't be a great maze, and just because of the, it has to be quiet. The only thing that makes noise are the monsters, and even then, what's the point?
It feels like every year at Horror Nights, there's at least one maze that's just like, this movie came out this year, and here's the maze for it. And if we have a Quiet Place for the new Quiet Place movie, that's going to be this maze this year, and it never leaves an impact. I don't think this would be very different. Because I don't think they could pull off the silence thing, which would, that's the unique selling point of these movies. The next one that, it's not exactly the same, but it's similar. So if you remember on the last map, there was the flower symbol. And we said this is in the Parisian courtyard, so we know this is going to be Latin America. And apparently, the Horror Nights Nightmares people who make these maps listened to our episode, and they knew that because now it's the same flower, but they put it over a picture of Latin America. So it's everything from Mexico down to the very bottom of Chile.
Yeah. It's gonna be very interesting to see where they go with it. I'm excited to see, like, is it gonna be like another Monstros where they try to
Will it be
make it,
multiple, or will it just
yeah,
be one?
will it be one? Will they focus on one country? Will they focus on all countries? Will they have plaques this time telling you where this monster is from? That was my big takeaway. Please tell me where this monster is
We want the
from.
backstory. We want the monster backstories.
Yes, I
So
want the tea.
those are the only things that are the same, and everything else is not just like a little tweak, but totally different. So let's just start at the let's start at the Terra Tram. We're just going to go in the order that we talked about last night. So if you remember last time, the Terra Tram was just a picture of the Terra Tram. We were saying we're hoping Hollywood Harry comes back. This time it is the Blumhouse logo.
Yes, and actually this changed because before the Blumhouse logo was
In the DreamWorks
in a
Theater.
DreamWorks theater, exactly.
And we thought it would be another horror Blumhouse show. Now it looks like they're moving the horrors of Blumhouse to the tram. Personally, not very psyched for that. I was really hoping to be Hollywood Harry. I like kind of more original concepts. These horrors of Blumhouse mazes, I've enjoyed them in the past. I enjoyed the one that was Freaky and the Black Phone. But I feel like if it's on the tram, it's going to be more Purge, and I'm really dreading that.
Yeah, it's gonna be very interesting because what are they gonna do? If they do like Five Nights at Freddy's, or they can have
That would be more interesting,
animatronics.
but again, Five Nights at Freddy's is going to be hard to pull off. I feel like definitely some Megan, which will be fun to see. I just really feel like it's going to be a lot more Purge. One thing I did remember is last year, if you had the RIP ticket, they had an exclusive Black Phone photo op on the tour that you could do. That was pretty cool. And there is a new Black Phone movie coming out in 2025, so they might be wanting to promote that, so we might see some Black Phone stuff in the maze. But it just sounds like a repeat of that Black Phone Freaky maze we had a while back, probably with Purge mixed in. And I don't know. I'm not super psyched for that. Where are you at?
It's gonna be interesting. We're probably gonna do RIP tickets again this year.
Yeah.
So what are they gonna do for us in terms
We
of,
want the bonuses.
yeah, are they gonna have our own photo op again with the killer, or is it gonna be some different house? Are we gonna take photos with the animatronics of Freddy's?
I want a real animatronic Megan.
Is it gonna be a Megan Squad like the?
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I'm hoping this one changes, personally. Next, we can talk about in the Curious George lot. So these are the two mazes you have to walk past Hogwarts to get to. In the last map, they had the knife and the
Stars
stars and the
with the
moon.
moon.
So we had some fun ideas for that. We thought maybe Chucky, maybe Halloween for the knife, maybe Gremlins or Nightmare on Elm Street for the moon and stars. Those are way out.
Yeah, it's
Totally different direction. Now it's a lantern, which I wonder when you talk to me about the lantern because you knew what this was more than I did.
it was supposed to be our speculation is that it could be insidious, especially when the father goes into the other world. And the lantern is what he uses to navigate it to see where all the monsters are.
Yeah. I've been told the lantern's a big part of those Insidious movies.
Yeah, that would be very spooky in terms because in that other world it's very dark. So if this maze is for the most part darker than most other mazes, then that would definitely amplify the scare factor, especially when people pop out with this
Yep.
That's gonna be exciting. Insidious movies, I'm kind of like, eh. But if they go with the You're in the Other World kind of feel to it, then I'll be more excited about it.
Now, we have seen Insidious at the event before, but it's been a while, so it feels like it could be time to refresh that and bring some of the new concepts they've been using at Horror Nights to that franchise. I believe it's also a James Wan franchise, and we've talked in a few episodes about how he had that merger with Blumhouse, so this might be the first fruit we're seeing of more James Wan properties coming to the event.
Either way, it's going to be very exciting to see the take they go with it. I'm just concerned.
It's not
How?
our favorite franchise.
Yeah.
The next one is it's the female, like the international symbol for female with a circle with the lines underneath, but with the Bride of Frankenstein hair on top. So it definitely seems like this is going to be Bride of Frankenstein
It's going to be a
in
problem.
some form.
Is it going to be when she first awakens and hates her husband?
Well, it's curious because if you remember the Q&A we talked about, Murty said there's not going to be a direct repeat this year of something he's done before. And he's done a Bride of Frankenstein maze before. It was Bride of Frankenstein kind of versus the Brides of Dracula. So is this going to be like a sequel of that where it's the revenge of the Brides of Dracula, maybe? Or the Bride of Frankenstein fighting a new monster? Or just is it going to do just a straight up adaptation of the movie? That would be kind of interesting to see, actually.
This could also be that place where it's a real place with a made up history.
Right, it's Transylvania again.
Yeah, it'll be Transylvania. He's gonna mix in the fights with Dracula's wife. I don't know,
So I don't
man.
know. We'll see. We'll see. I was think I would have been more hyped for just the Dracula maze because I feel like Dracula is. I mean, he was the first Universal monster. He's not as big as Frankenstein, but I feel like he's number two, and he's had to really share the spotlight in these Universal monsters mazes. I was kind of excited with the concept that it was going to be just the Dracula maze.
Yeah, well, he's not as big because he's only one human versus Frankenstein multiple.
I don't know. Just because we've seen a Bride of Frankenstein maze already, I would be a little disappointed if this is what it turns out to be, that we're doing that again when they still haven't done Creature from the Black Lagoon, haven't done Solo Dracula. I feel like if you're gonna do a solo maze, do it for a monster who hasn't had a solo maze yet.
That'd be interesting.
So that's it for the Curious George lot. Then we can look at the lower lot mazes. So the first one we'll look at is it's the how would you describe this? It's that kind of tent we talked about. I don't remember the name of it, but it's like a kind of like a bunker and it's on fire and it has the toxic symbol on the side.
Yes, and it's currently going to be where in front of the mummy,
Yeah.
and whereas before that used to be where the symbol of silence was.
Yeah, so this is next to the mummy attraction. It kind of connects to the mummy. If you go down the escalators in the park, you can think, oh, this track, you'll end up closer to Transformers in the back, if you know the park, just trying to do a little spatial reasoning there. So this one, I think this is not an IP. It doesn't have the little symbol that it's tied to a movie, so this is going to be something original. I think the best I could come up with was this is going to be re a remix of Toxic Tunnel, which was a scare zone they did in 2017. Ages ago, when you still go to the Metro lots to get there, you had to go through a tunnel, and that was always a scare zone. And that year, it was that there had been a toxic spill, and there were all these people who had been infected with toxicity and gone nuts coming after you.
Yeah, it was a lot of strobe lights, if I
A lot of big
recall.
strobe effects.
Which have you noticed that they've recently have moved away from strobe
They've cut
lights?
down the strobe dramatically, probably
Yeah,
for epilepsy warnings.
that is true. Although I did enjoy it because it makes it a little harder to see where the scare actors are coming at you, even when you can kind of see them coming. In one flash they're there, in the next flash they're not. It's kind of
Yeah.
it added to the effect.
What we've seen in the 6 or so years that we've gone is that Horror Nights used to have a much grungier feel to it, with stuff like the strobes and the go-go dancers, and feels like they used to be a little more pyro, and they've really moved away from that. It feels more corporate now, it feels a lot cleaner.
Last year when I went twice. I went with you guys and with the RIP tour, and then I took the regular general admissions tour. When we did the general admissions, usually the way they would open Horror Nights is that the scare zone would be the first thing you see, and the actors, as soon as the gauntlet was lit was rung, the scare actors would come in, and you would walk through the scare zone. Last year they didn't do that. We didn't see any scare actors for the most part until way later at night.
Well, that's partially because we started at 5 and the event doesn't open officially till
No, but
7.
general admission.
Didn't Oh,
see
when you
it
were there,
anywhere.
general admission.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow, yeah, that's shocking.
General
They
admission
used to
didn't
run
see
at
it.
you at the
Yeah,
start.
exactly. That I was
The
like,
opening scare mounting.
where are the people? This is what I was talking
But
about.
just the density of scare actors in that scare zone has been reduced a
Yeah.
lot.
And also like the amount of people going to them has dramatically increased. So I wonder if that's
That could be part of
a
it.
safety issue that they don't want to stop the horde of people by having all these scare actors in the beginning.
So maybe they'll have more scare actors if they remix Toxic Tunnel. I really don't know what else that could be. It feels like if it's an original, it could be anything based on, because it's a very vague symbol that they're using for this.
Yeah.
The next one is a pig with kind of the eyes crossed out, because it's a dead pig, basically. So my first thought on this was Saw, because all the killers in Saw always wear pig heads. It's kind of the mask they use, and their base is a pig slaughterhouse, basically. But the speculation online that's been kind of backed up by a few leakers that we follow is that this is actually going to be the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I think that's intriguing, the concept that we're going to see not the family's house, but we're going to go to the slaughterhouse. If you remember in the movie, they talk about how the hitchhiker works at the slaughterhouse and their family's been in the slaughterhouse business for a long
For
time.
generations, basically.
And you think about when Murdy was talking about he had that maze that was giving him nightmares to research, and the research, and it was the most disgusting maze he's ever done, and it's going to be an IP, but kind of an original take. You can see how if they're going to do the Sawyer Texas Chainsaw Family slaughterhouse, and this is where they're slaughtering people, that could definitely reach that level of the extra gross terror that would keep someone like Murdy up at night.
I'm excited to see it because the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, when I was a child, was
Yeah.
terrifying.
It did.
So,
It made our top 20.
yes, it
It was
did.
number 19. So wasn't very happy. It was definitely on the list.
Yeah.
And it's a fun franchise. It's been really fun at the event before. And I would be excited because if they announce this, we'll get to watch and talk about a Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which is a really weird movie that I would love to talk about for a little bit with someone else.
Maybe Murdy is gonna make it what is it, the 2022 version of Texas Chainsaw Massacre
That would be tragic.
with all
That would be awful. That was
the
such a bad
influencers?
movie.
Maybe that's why it's been keeping him up
Yeah, he's like, oh, how do I do this? Oh, the movie's so bad, I'm having nightmares.
at night.
So
That would be quite a take to it.
I think there's only one left that we can talk about. This is in by the way, the Texas Chainsaw speculation, that's at, they call it the T-pad. This is the one that connects to, if you are looking at Transformers directly, you go to the right and it has kind of an alley where last year it had Holidays in Hell that let you out on the other side. Last year it let you out right by Stranger Things. This year it's going to be letting you out at, it's called Soundstage 15, so this is in a soundstage. And it's a pair of sunglasses with bright lights coming through the eyes. And most of these IPs have a little film reel to designate this as a movie. This one has a vinyl record, which I think is indicates is going to be music. And the sunglasses with the blinding lights looks like The Weeknd is coming back.
The Weeknd is a very highly probable speculation for this, especially because he's done it before.
Yeah.
We've had The Weeknd. We did The Weeknd Maze, and then we had The
The After
Weeknd
Hours
The After
Nightmare.
Hours Nightmare.
That was the maze.
Yeah. No, the drinks in the bar.
That wasn't the nightmare there was how watered down they were.
Yes. So it could probably be The Weeknd.
The
However,
guy, I don't know his last name, Abel, The Weeknd, the actual guy, is a big Horror Nights fan. I
yes.
know that's why he put a lot of himself into that maze. He actually worked on it with Murdy. And I think it was a success. I enjoyed it. I don't know if I wanted to come back.
It was interesting.
I would rather see something new there.
But my question is it gonna be what story is he telling this time? Because last time it was sort of like the botchness of too much plastic surgery and the horrors of it. So where is this take gonna go?
Yeah. So I'm open to this one because the last one, while I enjoyed a lot more than I thought I would. So it could probably do that again. Still would prefer to see something new, but I'm not gonna write it off because the last first one I thought was probably like an A for me.
The first maze
I
they
really
did?
liked it. Yeah, it felt, it was long and it was varied and it had some good creativity in it.
It was different. It
Yeah.
was more like a C for me. Just
Oh, that's pretty bad.
I didn't enjoy it too much.
So you can't be excited for a weekend too.
I'm not, but I will walk through
So
I'll have an open mind.
I'll just let's before we move. So that's all the symbols on the map. Oh no, there's one that we really don't
Oh.
know. So the DreamWorks Theater, last time it was the Blumhouse logo. This is where the Horrors of Blumhouse was last year, where they had the little Megan show. And this year it's changed to just a globe. So I'm thinking this is just Universal because they have the globe as their logo. So I'm thinking it's going to be the Horrors of Universal, and maybe they'll do classic monsters there, and then they'll show clips from the old movies, or they'll be showing different Universal movies that are coming out either last year or the next year. But I think it's going to be the same basic concept that it was last time. It'd be cool if they did classic monsters in the prop room. They had props from classic monster movies. That would get me really excited.
That would be interesting to see the original, like, Dracula
Yeah,
costume
wear
for
like a
it.
cape or something, or
Yeah.
some fur from the Wolfman costume.
The shoes that the Frankenstein's monster actor had to wear.
You could show the Invisible Man costume again. That would be really cool to see the original, because we saw the modern Invisible Man costume last year.
Was just an empty
Just
base.
well, no, it was in there. You just can't see it. So that's the DreamWorks Theater. The Waterworld Theater, it looks like kind of the Red Cross logo, but crossed out.
Yeah, so that one's a
We really had,
stumper.
we were really stumped on this one. So we thought just anything that's in a hospital that people are getting messed up. And then it's an IP, it has the film logo on it.
It has to be a hospital and somehow water related.
So it could just be a hospital that happens to be like a floating hospital is fine. The hospital horror movie that always comes to mind is Halloween 2, but I don't think that really serves the stunt show concept very well.
No.
And then I thought maybe Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, The Dream Warrior. So that does take place in an asylum. And you could see maybe the kids, if they're having a dream, that they're in this weird water environment. And Freddy could be a killer who's a lot more agile. So he could be stunt performers, could portray Freddy, and he could be in multiple places at once. So that makes more sense, but it feels like why would they choose to use the,
Waterworld
well, why would they choose
stage.
to use this kind of medical logo for Nightmare on Elm Street? And if they got the rights to Nightmare on Elm Street, wouldn't they want to then put that in a maze? So we're pretty stumped on this one.
Yeah, and plus, even if it was Nightmare on Elm Street, it's gonna be quite an interesting take for safety for the Freddy actor to have
With
some.
the knife on his hand, yeah.
Exactly, especially if he has to jump in the water. So,
So, what's your overall impression of Speculation Map 2? If you
Speculation
zoom
Map
out, look at the
2.
whole thing.
I will say, as I'm not as jazzed about it as I was for
Yeah.
Speculation Map 1.
My hype level definitely took a hit with Map 2.
Yeah, especially all these new symbols and the locations that stump me. I'm just like, what's going on? How is this gonna work exactly? And what could they put here to make it work? Because at the end of
Yeah.
the day, you still have to make it work no matter what.
Especially if this ends up, I mean, right now this whole event feels like it's going to hinge on is this a quiet place or not, for me, honestly.
Yeah.
Because it feels like now it's looking a lot more like a borderline. Last time it looked like this was going to be a great event. Now it looks like it's going to be borderline kind of bad. And if it's quiet place, like if this is Silent Hill, that's going to raise it. If it's not, if it's quiet place, it's going to lower it. So one thing we do have to caution, these maps are speculation maps. They're not 100% accurate ever.
Just like last
The
time,
last one was almost 100% inaccurate. They've changed almost everything. And it's all still is subject to change. And it's not all based on leaks. A lot of it's based on speculation. A lot of speculation feels like it comes from nowhere. People just start saying, oh, I really want this. And it kind of gets wished into existence by the Horror
Oh.
Nights community. I feel like that's what happened with Nightmare on Elm Street, where everyone really just, there was never a real leak about that. People just kept saying, I really wanted to be Freddy. And they said so much that it became kind of a mantra of the community this year. And then when it was kind of deconfirmed, that's definitely not coming as a leak, people got really upset, but it was never confirmed in the first place. So we'll see. There's still a lot of room to grow. We still really don't know what's coming this year, except probably Ghostbusters has actually been strongly leaked. I feel like the leakers are backing up Texas Chainsaw Massacre, so that has some room behind
Validity.
it.
Yeah, we're still gonna be waiting to see if Speculation Map 3 drops.
Yeah, I think Speculation Map 3 won't drop until after they've made a few announcements, so we'll have a better picture of what we can expect by then.
Hopefully they'll announce at least one house by then.
Yes, it definitely feels like it's time to start announcing these houses. It
Yeah.
feels like they've waited almost too long. It's time to start building the hype.
It's
We're getting into
yeah.
spring. Tickets are going to go on sale in just about 2 months.
And we need to start looking at dates to see when can we actually go, because a lot of these sell out
They do.
so
There's yours. They
quickly.
always sell it fast in Hollywood. I mean, Orlando's already has their tickets up. They've had them up for a while.
They had them up for a while, but that's because a lot of people fly to them.
Yeah, you have to get your hotel. But you can rest
Exactly.
assured when they do drop tickets, we'll be here and we'll explain to you, we'll break down the different ticket types and tell you what is good for you.
Exactly. And just don't feel that you're obligated to do the RIP tours
Yeah,
or things
we'll
like
get into
that.
it. Let's save the next episode for the next episode. But yeah, we'll talk about what's going to be good for you. So look forward to that episode. And I think that's a wrap on the news.
That dropped literally
Yeah,
last
this is breaking. I think
night.
we may be the first, we're not the first video, but we're the first podcast, I think, that is going to be talking about this. So if you're a new listener, welcome. And now we're going to talk about our usual program, which, because there's only a limited amount of horror nights going on throughout the year, and we want to do monthly episodes. We've been trying to do other Halloween things. We talk about horror movies as well on this podcast. So something we did that was going to be kind of the main chunk of this episode was yesterday on the 27th of April, we went to the Spooky Swap Meet in Heritage Park in LA. Alvaro, can you tell us about the swap meet a little bit?
It was fun
Because you were the
because
one who found this.
I found this because it showed up as an ad on my Facebook feed, and then I was like, "Oh, I thought this was for Halloween time." And when I looked at the dates, I'm like, "Oh no, that's in April. Oh, that's coming up."
It's like a halfway to Halloween thing.
So I was very excited. I had never heard of this before. I was like, as an LA native, I felt ashamed that I had not
Yeah.
that I had not heard about it. But to be fair, there's a lot of stuff happening in LA all the time that's easy to miss.
Only since we started this podcast has our social media feed figured out that we're obsessed with Halloween. And now it's feeding that obsession by only feeding us Halloween content all year round.
The algorithm is working.
It's stalking us.
Exactly. So we bought our tickets. We were debating whether to do the VIP parking, and then it ran out.
Yeah, so we did. We were very nervous. If you've been to LA, if you live in LA, you know parking is always an issue. Everywhere you go, you need to have a plan.
Yes, it's a premium. I've gone places where I know where I'm going. So what I do is I go to Google Maps, Street View, and
Yeah.
then look where's the parking
You have to do
locations.
that if you're in LA.
So I was very
We were a little
concerned.
nervous, but it turned out to not be a problem. It turned out the VIP parking really, you don't, if you ever go to this, it's a total scam. There's plenty of general parking, and people leave this event at a good clip. There's always people going in and always people coming out. So they'll just have you wait a little bit, and a parking space opens up within a few minutes.
When we arrived, the lot was full, and as the parking attendant for the show for the swap meet was talking to us, someone walked by and went, "I'm
Yeah, we
leaving."
waited like 10 seconds. So let's not focus too much on the parking. That's not the biggest. Let's talk about the actual swap meet. So it was pretty well attended, I would say.
It was.
It wasn't packed to the gills, like there was no breathing room, but every booth there was busy. There was, how many vendors do you think there were? Maybe 20, 30?
Give or take, but they were clumped but also spread out in
There were.
areas.
It wasn't huge. It wasn't a sprawling swap meet.
Well, Heritage Square isn't
It's
huge
not
either.
huge, but it was dense, I would say.
The walk from the street to the Heritage Park, if you've never gone there, it's all dirt. So that was my bad, that because
You have to wear your, you can't wear your city shoes.
I wore I received an email about it. I was told that it was a dirt path. I thought it was a dirt path only up to where the booths were, and then it would be paved.
Yeah.
So I took white shoes.
Now, if you're not from LA, the amount of dirt would not be a problem to you. It would feel like a pretty normal amount of dirt. But if you are from LA, it was a shocking amount of dirt.
I was not looking, I did not see that coming.
It did have a good spooky vibe. I remember I thought I wore like a Haunted Mansion shirt, and I thought this might be a little too fall because it's in springtime. But I felt like I was not fall enough once you were there. It was very goth,
It
the
was. I wore too much white, I
Yes, you
realized,
stuck out.
and I should have dressed darker, but it was a warm day. I didn't want to check the heat.
So the main attraction, of course, was just the shopping, and there were all these different stalls, and there was all pretty much just Halloween themed items with some horror themed items.
There were decorations, masks, different things that you can hang around your house year round. It doesn't necessarily have to be just for Halloween.
And they had a few other things. They had a few picture opportunities that we'll throw some pictures up on our socials you can check out. And they had food trucks that were crazy overpriced that we didn't use. And they had one that was the Hale House, I believe you could walk through.
Yes, it was actually there was someone there that was talking to you about the
Yes.
history of the
Yes, I
house.
enjoyed that. I'm a bit of a history nerd, so my other
Yeah.
passion.
It's almost like you got a degree.
Almost, almost. Of course, we all know Undead Ed got his degree in
Undead
undead studies. Yes,
studies.
I use it every day. So
Exactly.
that's kind of an overview. So I would recommend this event. I thought I would go, and I thought it's going to be a struggle to find one thing to buy to talk about on the podcast. Instead, I had the opposite problem where I was like, okay, I want to buy a lot of things. I need to be a little selective here and not just break the bank.
Yeah, the one thing we did, it was crazy because we walked through the first couple booths, not knowing what we were going to see. And we're like, okay, it's going to take a while for us to find something in it. And then we were like,
We
I
started
want to buy
finding stuff
that.
like right away,
I
like
want to
from the
buy
first
that.
booth we
Yeah.
went to.
And then we were like, no. Let's go through all of them first.
Right, and then we'll start to make
Yeah,
selections.
circle back and then start
And they
over.
had good bargains too. There were definitely a lot of stuff that was overpriced, but I feel like we definitely found good bargains and we
Yes.
capitalized on them.
I definitely didn't expect to see some of the things that we bought. And I purchased some mystery items that we're
We
going to
did. We're going
open.
to unbox those live. Let's talk about what we have first that is not boxed. So we'll give you a little ASMR experience here as we go through our items. We got this. It's a paperback book, Haunted Southern California, Ghosts and Strange Phenomena of the Golden State. Because we've been thinking about going to a few haunted locations around here and giving a little review of how that attraction is. We thought this might be a good kind of kick in the pants, get us to
Yeah.
find a few. And Alvaro has a much larger one as well. What do you have there?
I have real ghost stories, true tales of terrifying spirits and haunted
And
places.
this looks more like a textbook. I've pretty tried to study this in my undead studies program.
Honestly, yes, it feels like it's a 2-inch thick
Yeah,
book.
that's a big one.
Yeah, and it has a lot of one of them here, for example, it's a lovely story. Brownie, the ghost dog of Daytona Beach. That's a lovely tale. It sounds like it's gonna be a lovely tale.
For $5. So that was a pretty good deal. I got two stickers. There was a ton of stickers. The stickers were anything you would want. I remember they had one I thought was fun of Disney princesses, but they were paired off with Universal Monsters. I enjoyed the Ariel with the Creature in the Black Lagoon. I thought was fun. But I ended up with very, very tasteful kind of PG-13 representations of Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees as women. So very feminist,
Yes.
very female empowering little stickers. So I'm gonna think I'm gonna put these by the recording equipment because they are very Horror Nights themed.
Yes.
So those were fun. I think you have some here too. What did you get?
I also got Jason Voorhees,
Freddy.
Freddy, and one more time,
Leatherface.
Leatherface. Sorry, I'm blanking out. I'm drinking my coffee, and
What
then
kind of podcast do you co-host?
my coffee hasn't kicked in yet. I'm sorry. But these are more cutesy.
Yeah.
These are slightly better. They all look like little kids that just got told, did you kill someone else again?
Yeah.
I told you not more anymore. Oh. So these are very cute. I really enjoy them. I got them for a steal, 3 for 10. They're
Yep.
about 2 inches
They're
in
decent. They're
diameter.
decent.
Yeah. And they're very cute. I'm gonna put them on my water bottles.
So the main thing I was actually hoping to buy was just a few things to put in the apartment when it becomes Halloween time, just to decorate a little bit. So I got kind of two items to that effect. I have one that's a bit of a almost like a woodcut, so it's a painting on wood or print, I suppose, of Madame Leota from Disneyland's Haunted Mansion, which I'm an OC guy, so it was fun to have a little haunted mansion in the house, I think, for Halloween time. Also kind of on that same theme, I got a Nightmare Before Christmas poster that also will go. I have a little burgeoning poster collection in my closet, so I thought this was the right size to add to that. It's a good deal. So those were my decorations.
My one critique for Undead Ed is he has a lot of posters that he does not put up. I'm waiting for the day where I come to this apartment and it's just going to be Decoration City with all these
The
posters.
walls are a little barren right now.
Yes. For the next thing that I bought, I was surprised to see a lot of physical media. By that, I mean there were a lot of cassette and VHS tapes of movies and a lot of DVDs. I purchased two different movies for 2 for $5. One is called Apocalypse, and the second one is called Outpost Black Sun. Apocalypse looks like your run-of-the-mill apocalypse movie. But Alpus looks like it's Nazi ghosts.
Nazi zombies.
Yeah, Nazi zombie.
Everyone's favorite kind of zombie.
Exactly.
It's double satisfying to kill a Nazi zombie.
So I'm very excited. I tried to talk Undead Ed into watching one of these movies last night when we decided to watch American Werewolf in London, and then he shot me down. But I still enjoyed the American Werewolf for the first 10 minutes.
We did not watch much before news broke.
Yes.
We had to be on the scene. First on the scene. So the final item I purchased was my big ticket item of $20. Ooh, this is a game, How to Host a Murder. So it's a murder mystery game where you get 8 people together plus a host. Everyone has a character and you play a part. And apparently Vincent Price claims it's his favorite game. This is from 1985, so it's a bit of a relic. I've done a few of these with my family, so I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to get 8 people together, but it's super detailed. It's in great shape. It has an actual cassette tape that I'm hoping Vincent Price has sound on. We'll see.
That was the spookiest part, because I told Undead Ed, do you have a cassette player?
Yes. So if we ever manage to play this, I'll give a little review. It's not super Halloween-y, but it is murder, and I thought it was a great deal, so it made the cut.
It made the cut.
And that was my entire haul.
Yes, the only other things that we got were some posters and some, not posters, flyers,
For upcoming events.
Flyers for upcoming events. For example, one of them, that's going to be the Spooky Street Fair, Friday, October 11th. And unfortunately, this one's all the way up in Bakersfield.
Yeah, we're not going to go to that one.
Well, that one's a little far, I'm sorry. It looks interesting, it looks exciting, but
I can tell
it's a
them
little
about
far.
Something more exciting. Why don't you tell them about our mystery bags here?
Yes. So this mystery bag, there was a seller, a lot of sellers.
There were a lot
mystery
of mystery bags, actually.
Yeah, there was a
we
lot.
We think we chose the best one.
Yes, this one was for $15. This mystery bag contains a shirt, Rocker Horror, stickers, and a button. Chosen at random. Final sale, no return, no exchanges. And on top of that, I also bought, from the same vendor, for $5, I bought a mystery concert shirt. I know it's not Halloween themed, but It was a mystery bag, and I was excited. So first, let's open the Halloween one.
Yes.
We're opening it live. So
I was opposed to opening the concert one on the show, actually, but I was overruled.
Yes. Yes, you were. Hopefully this isn't too loud for our headphone users.
We might need that part.
All right, here we go. Here are the stickers.
Oh, they're tiny.
Oh, but this looks like the ones you use for school.
Yeah. Stickers are not a great value for this mystery bag, I have to say.
I'm going to probably give this to the little kids.
You'll
in my
give this
family.
To a very small child.
Yeah.
Maybe you get that for a buck.
So what this describing, there's 4 rows of stickers.
They're very cutesy stickers.
They're 4 different types. So the first one is a black cat smiling with a witch's hat. It says, they all say happy Halloween or happy.
So it's a black cat, a pumpkin, a ghost, and a skull.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep it moving.
Ah. Oh, this one, I'm going to put this one in my bag.
Okay, that one's nicer.
Yeah, it's Jason Voorhees and with a pink background with hearts that you would give to someone on Valentine's
Day. And I
Day.
Believe that Jason is spelled in the Barbie font.
Yes, it is.
So is this presaging Margot Robbie playing Jason Voorhees
no,
in the
this
next
is
film?
Ken is going to be playing Jason Voorhees on the next film. I'm just Jason.
All right.
The next one. All right, here we go. The moment of truth. What is the shirt?
This is the main item in the mystery bag.
All right, open it a little more so I don't tear it on the staples. Here we go. Oh!
Oh, it's Chucky.
Chucky and his wife.
And Tiffany.
Yeah.
Very romantic.
Is that a... Oh, it's a bloody box of chocolates.
Oh, it's a nice, like, Valentine's shirt.
Yes, I would definitely give this to someone on Valentine's Day. And they still have the... the sticker price, yes, the price $30 t-shirt that I got for $15.
All right, that's actually not too bad. Yeah. The t-shirt's pretty decent.
Now, for the non-Halloween mystery item, the concert
yes.
shirt. Let's see. Let's see what it is. Oh, Dancing Fever.
Oh. I have no idea who that is.
Same.
Oh, Florence and the Machine.
Florence and the Machine. Okay, Dance Fever Tour. Oh, it's a Dance Fever Tour. Okay.
Dance Fever Tour.
Okay.
Okay, are you a big Florence and the Machine guy?
Not really, but
are you glad you own the shirt now?
I'm glad I own it because Please don't come up to me and say, name five songs. That's the only thing I ask for.
But all right. So I think that's a wrap on the speech. So it was a fun thing. If you're into Halloween, you want something to do in springtime in L.A., that'll kind of start you getting back into the mood as Halloween season will start. It ramps up early every year, it seems. It's a fun event.
I enjoyed it.
Fun candy, fun shopping, decent prices, a few photo ops.
Yeah, I enjoyed the photo ops. I enjoyed the history of the Hill House. Annabelle was there. Her demon was taking a union break, so he wasn't actively possessing her. But I had a good time.
Okay. So I think now we can safely move into the film part of our review here.
Yes. We're starting off with my 18th, number 18th film, because we did your number 18th film last time.
Yeah, so if you remember, we did Scream, which was my 18th film. So if you're new to the podcast, we each have a top 20 all-time horror list. And we actually have a tier list now online that we always link in our bio. So we've already done my first three movies. We've done Alvaro's first two. So now we're going to launch right into Alvaro's rank
18th.
Rank 18th, which was
Jaws, 1975. Yes.
So this is your movie. So tell us, first of all, I think everyone knows what Jaws, just briefly, what's it about?
Jaws is a lovely movie about a coastal Halloween, about a tropical island.
It's not tropical.
It's not tropical.
It's in Rhode Island.
It's a nice summer break island, and it hosts people for the 4th of July every year. And it's a very nice, pleasant place to take the family and enjoy the beaches. But unfortunately, this year, there's been a new guest, an uninvited great white.
Mm.
And it follows the struggle of man versus nature to see who wins at the end.
Yeah, it's a big battle. So the giant shark, and this is known for being the first blockbuster movie with really heavy special effects, big action sequences, and really drew people in a way that movies just hadn't before. And of course, now the blockbuster is really the only kind of movie Hollywood even makes. So it all started right here. So this is either the start of something new and wonderful or the beginning of the end was this movie.
Yes. And what something I noticed and that I've told you earlier was that the name of the island is called Amity. And it seems that everything now related to horror has Amity related to it.
There's a lot of Amity in the 70s. Yeah. It was a popular name.
It was Amity Island, Amityville Horror, Amityville Terrors, Amityville Exorcisms. What's going on in this place?
So I'll just tell you my first reaction when you told me this was your number 18 movie was Jaws is not a horror movie in my mind.
It is, because at the end of the day, you don't know what's scary. The scary is the unknown. And what's the most scary, what's the biggest unknown thing to us for the most part is the ocean.
I think you just say it has something scary in it. I mean, telling someone you love them is scary, but a rom-com is not a horror movie.
This is not a rom-com.
So, no, it's a tale of love between man and shark. But so it definitely has horror elements. So I'm not going to contest it. Your top 20. I'm not going to say don't put it on the list. But I'll just say when I think of Jaws, I think it's a thriller with an action movie at the end. And it really is it feels like it's two different movies. Where the first half, where they're still trying to prove to the town mayor that there is a shark problem in the town, that feels a little more like a horror movie. And what's great about this first half of the movie is how little you see the shark.
Yes, it's talked about everywhere. It's referenced everywhere, but you don't see it. Even in the beginning, when there was the intro of this film starts with a shark attack, you don't see the shark.
They have a few tricks to let you know the shark's around. So they do these cool POV underwater shots where you kind of see the shark's vision.
Yeah.
As you see, like, legs kicking. Then it'll cut back to the top of the water. You see the woman swimming, and then she's pulled underwater. And when she comes back up, she's screaming, and she's thrashing around, and she's underwater again. And then the red water starts washing in from shore, which is a really cool, scary way of showing the shark attack. You also see at some point the shark, he attacks a pier, and he sees debris from the pier being pushed in the water, getting closer and closer to the man trying to get out of the water, and you know the shark's under there getting closer. That's a very effective scene as well. You do actually, the first time you see the shark is about at the halfway mark of the movie, where he's attacking the son of the main character, Brody, who's the town's chief of police, And you see the shark, and because you become so accustomed to not seeing the shark, you see him underwater, and he's huge. And that is actually quite a chilling moment as you see this shark bearing down this guy, and he's, you know, 5 times the size of the guy he's about to chomp down on.
And the scariest part was that most people thought they were safe on boats or on some kind of vessel. And then when you see the shark make mincemeat out of it and then eat the person, you're like, oh, this is even scarier than before.
Yeah. The people are. I'm trying to get at what the theme. I'll say I watched this movie, I think, for the first time. I think it was almost during COVID. It
You,
was.
wait, you saw Jaws for the first time?
I think I maybe had seen parts of it a long time ago, but I actually sat down and watched the whole thing during COVID. I had a better impression of it watching it that time than I did
This time
this
around?
time.
Maybe because it was the first time versus now you're looking
I
it
think
to
so. I think
deep dive into
there's a
it.
lot of scenes of people sitting around having long, slow, quiet conversations about sharks. And I don't think dialogue has ever really been Steven Spielberg's strong suit in a movie. He's great at action and telling a story through film. I don't think he's great just sitting down and just making two people talking interesting. Now, that's what I kind of got from this movie, is because it's the first blockbuster, it's kind of this interesting middle point between old film, which was, I think, a lot slower, and new film, which was a lot more action-packed. And I can see how if you would ne if this was you were seeing this in 1975, you've never seen anything like it, you would be at the edge of your seat probably the whole time. But seeing it now, you're going to say, I'm being such a hypocrite, because I'm going to suggest some really old movies in my next few listings that are very slow. But the fact that this is kind of has both, it makes the slower parts feel so slow that it kind of drew me out of it. And I was like, I've heard enough from Quint about the USS Indianapolis now. I know the sharks have this undead, soulless black eyes. Let's move on. Let's see some shark stuff.
But that's the thing. That's what I enjoyed about it is the some of these stuff you never get to see because it's just glanced over or done really quickly, and then you just move on exactly to the action part. So I enjoyed it that they actually went through the politics of this shark attack of yeah, not everyone is down for it, especially because one of the things when it's discovered that it's possibly a shark attack, they want to close down the beach, but then you realize that most of these people don't want the beach to be closed because their livelihood is based on tourism. So I completely understood like some of these like politics behind the scenes that happen in movies that normally don't get filmed.
I understood that to a degree. I thought at some point the mayor becomes so entranced again. He's the one who's fighting to keep the beaches open. Even after it becomes very clear that there is a huge shark problem in the town, and he's like basically forcing people to go on the water at one scene, which I thought was really silly because it's already 4th of July. Everyone's already at the island. They're already spending money. Why do you care whether or not they actually swim or not? And he's like, you guys need to get in the water. No one's swimming. He like forces one of his friends to start swimming.
It felt like a sacrifice.
Right. It was very odd. It feels very 70s. It feels very Spielberg that they have these very almost caricature-esque villains, which works better in a movie like Indiana Jones, which is just kind of action you don't think about too much. In a movie that's trying to be a little more thoughtful, didn't really land for me.
Yeah, one of the things that, speaking of that character, the mayor, he doesn't really get on board that there is a shark issue until you see the shark on that 4th of July event. And the fact that his kids were also in the 4th of July really drove it home because he said, my kids were also there. Now he gets it that this is a problem.
Yeah. So we have three main characters in this movie, the Brody, who's the chief of police, Hooper, who is a scientist from the Oceanography Institute to study sharks, and Quint, who is a man whose his whole career is just hunting and killing sharks. And at some by the about the halfway point, they all end up on Quint's boat together, the Orca, and they've now been commissioned to hunt the sharks. So the first half, they're just trying to prove. Quint's not in that part. It's just Brody and Hooper trying to prove the shark exists, so we need to go hunt it down. And they're opposed by the mayor, who's always saying, no, the shark's problem's been solved, or there is no shark problem, keep everything open.
The townspeople who say, don't close this place down, my livelihood's on the
Yeah,
line.
the town people seem really eager to get eaten by the sharks. They seem very unconcerned by it until it's too late. And the first half, again, I like much better because it does keep that mystique around the shark. It feels they have shots of people, especially at the very beginning, because they don't even announce to the town that there was a shark attack until the second attack. So a little boy is killed by a shark. And there's scenes where people are on the beach, they're happily swimming, And we as the audience know they're in danger, and the swimmers do not. And this is an old Hitchcockian motif where he would say, if you have a bomb ticking in a movie, there's two ways to do it. You either don't show the audience or the characters that there's a bomb ticking, and it'll be a big shock when it explodes. If the bomb's, like, say it's onto the table, you leave the table curtain untouched and the bomb explodes, it shocks the audience and shocks the characters. But to create tension, what you can do is you lift the curtain only the audience, and the audience now knows there's a bomb, even if the characters do not. And this is going to build a lot of tension for the audience. And this movie does a great job of that in those first scenes where you know something's bad going to happen to these characters, and they don't. And I love that part. Once they're on the boat, it starts to lose me. It feels like the terror element really
It slowed
retreats into the
down.
background. It lasts a long time. So this is another critique I had, is this third act starts about an hour into the movie, and it lasts an hour. It's too long of a third act.
It's a 2-hour-long movie.
It's too long of a movie. You could cut 20 to 30 minutes of this movie, I think, and it would be a better, tighter movie.
I love, please critique more about how you hate dialogue, and we'll talk about that when we get to your movies later on.
I feel like it's just wasted dialogue. I don't know. Not Spielberg's forte. And just in too many scenes of, like, they shoot the barrel to the shark at one point and then they do it again, and it's too much repetition. At some point you get it, the shark's super dangerous. We don't need another scene establishing he's super dangerous. I feel like we could have gotten to the end of, there is a scene at the end where he eats one of the, I won't spoil which one, he eats one of the three men on the boat, and that is quite a grisly scene. I like that part.
His death was very terrifying.
Yeah, that was nice. But even once you're on the boat, it stops playing the game of you don't see the shark, and you're seeing this big robot shark they created quite a bit.
Bruce.
Bruce, and he looks good when he's under the water, okay. Once he's out of the water, he looks like a big rubber robot shark.
Well, remember, this is
Yeah, so again, it
1975.
looked good in 75. I feel like now it's starting to show his age, and not
Course.
even in a way that can be a campy way, because it's just meant to look realistic.
Yeah,
So it lost some points there for me as well.
they definitely once they came back in the 90s with Jurassic Park,
Yes, so then
animatronics got way
that one then
better.
held up.
Yes, but
I'd say so this so that's what I don't like. The saving grace of this movie is the John Williams theme, the iconic shark theme, and also some of just the motifs that just the townspeople have or that Brody have are all really well done. This is kind of the career that kind of launched John Williams. He also has done Indiana Jones. He's in every Spielberg movie. He's also done Star Wars. You're very well respected. I did a report on him when I was like 11 years old. You have to do a musician. I was like, I'm going to do something weird. I'm going to do John Williams.
Oh, wow.
And so I know quite a bit about him. And I'm a big fan. And of course, this score really makes the movie. I think without the John Williams score, this movie would not have been what it was or what it still is. Because it really is so effective. Just the kind of doo-doo, doo-doo. Do,
Yeah.
do, 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 do. So iconic. Really just builds that tension. And then when the strings come in and the tension's released, when the shark bites down, it's like such a, oh, such a moment of, you're almost relieved it's over. It's built up so much tension just through the music.
And I just the poster of Amityville Island is so iconic now that you'll recognize that it's from Jaws no matter where you see it or when you see it.
Yeah. Especially if you see it on the studio tour.
Exactly. Speaking of the studio tour, I love that they talk about it and then they have a Jaws set that you get to walk through, where they also tell you the reason why we don't see the shark a lot is because it kept breaking down.
Yes. And it's funny because I think if you had seen the shark in the beginning, this movie would not have been very good at all.
Yeah.
Because once you do see the shark more, it becomes worse. It's better for not seeing the shark.
I like that. I like that you don't see it until way down the line. But in a lot of movies now use that idea that you don't see the killer until
Alien, I
towards the
think, is
end.
most well known for that, where you barely see the alien in Alien. So much more effective because of it. It also helps you ground you in kind of these your main characters' perspectives, because they're not seeing the shark either until the end, but now they see it all the time.
No. But yeah, overall, I like Jaws. Jaws was cool.
It's still good. I still feel it has horror elements, but I think it's more of a thriller than horror.
We'll agree to disagree
And
then.
I think it is showing its age
Of
in ways
course,
that other
it's.
old movies haven't, just because it kind of is at that awkward transition stage where it has a foot in both camps of old film and new film, and it can't really be great at either because it's creating something new, which you have to understand. You have to give it some allowance for that, I think.
Well, this movie is almost 50 years old, so of course it's
Yes.
going to start showing its age.
Yes.
But yeah, let's go to our
Okay,
next
so
film.
that's Jaws. So next is my number, what is this, number 17?
Yes.
This was Hellraiser, which, if you don't know, is the movie with Pinhead, who's the Ashen White, the Cenobite. He's a demon to some, angel to others, and
Yes.
his whole head is covered in little pinpricks. That's why
This
he's Pinhead. So
the
he actually, the man who made this movie is Clive Barker. Who is he's an English guy, not a Clyde.
Centibytes.
He's a writer first, and he was interested in turning one of his stories into a film. And he went to a producer and said, "How much money would I get from a studio if I wanted to direct this a movie myself?" And they said, "You get around $1 million, which can let you make a movie that's set in one house with one monster." And he had a bunch of stories as well. I had this story called The Hellbound Heart. That's basically that, and that's what he directed, and it became a huge franchise. So I
Oh.
really appreciate that this was directed by the same man who wrote it, because you can tell he's not as experienced of a director. Like, the shots aren't as fancy, and there's a lot less visual storytelling. But what you do get, I think, is better characters, and it's a film that raises questions about the characters without so much answering them. It's there's more to chew on these
Yeah.
characters.
One of the things I did notice at some points in the film is that I mean, overall, it felt very grungy. But then at one
Yeah,
point,
very low, but you get that low
yeah,
budget feel.
it was that low budget feel. Then at one point, I felt like I was watching a soap opera. Like,
Yeah.
it had different feels to it throughout the film.
So originally this film was called, we tell you what it's about. It was originally called, I don't know if this was a real title, that was proposed or just a joke, but it was called The Sadomasochists from Hell. So it's about a man who's Frank Cotton, who is a total hedonist, and he always just seeks maximum pleasure, and he's a bit of a psychopath as well. He doesn't care if he hurts people to achieve that. And he finds his magical puzzle box. When he solves the puzzle box, they could say angels, some demons out there. They're really demons come, and they're all into mixing pleasure and pain. They're into sadomasochism. And they basically torture him to death. That's what they do when you solve your puzzle box. And then his brother then moves into this old house because he's trying to kind of make a fresh start with his wife, Julia. And he cuts himself on a nail, and the blood drips onto the floor. And this begins to reconstitute Frank's body. It's just when the Cenobite tortures you to death, I suppose if you can get blood and fresh kills, you can regenerate. And he's able to recruit Julia, who he had an affair with right before her wedding, to his brother, Larry, to kind of help him in seducing men to come back to the house so that Julia will murder them. Frank can then suck the blood and become whole again, all the while trying to dodge the return of Pinhead and the Cenobite. So it's actually a
Cenobites.
rather complicated plot. It's a lot less complicated than Jaws, which is a shark attack.
It's also complicated the fact that it's relying on the puzzle box to get really open the portal to all this alternative realm of pain.
Yeah. Now, what you may have noticed if you haven't seen this before, as we went through the plot descriptions, we didn't talk a lot about Pinhead and the Cenobites. And that's because the main tension of the movie, and really the bulk of the movie, is spent in this relationship between Frank and Julia.
Julia.
So, Kirstie is the daughter of Larry, who is Julia's husband, and she's kind of supposed to be the main character. She's the final girl, she's the one who triumphs at the end. But she doesn't really have much to do until about an hour into the movie. The focus is on this twist relationship between Frank and Julia. And this is a movie that is very sexual,
Yes.
where the whole reason Julia agrees to help Frank is they had this very brief affair right before her marriage to Larry, who, of course, is Frank's brother.
This is where I'm talking about that it felt like I was watching a soap opera.
Yeah.
This is those scenes of when she's looking back in time. Because one of the reasons they start talking about this is while they're looking at this house, they realize it's a mess. It looks like someone's been living like a squatter. Julia finds a picture of Frank. She goes to an empty room and starts
Well,
reminiscing.
she's in that picture.
She's in that picture, but she tears off so only Frank has
She
appeared.
doesn't want Larry to see that.
Exactly. So one of the things that she does when she
Or is
starts
she
to.
trying to get rid of that part of herself? See, that's what I like about this movie, is these characters do things, and it doesn't ever really answer definitively why do they do that. It's something you have to figure out and decide on your own through watching the whole thing and taking it in.
Yeah. And when she starts looking at her past, and the thing that shocked me the most was while she was having her affair with Larry, She did it on top of her wedding dress,
right,
which I felt was a bigger slap to Larry.
Well, it just is ramping up how wrong it is.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, this whole movie is about the tension between pain and pleasure. Frank is only at some point, but you have to endure the pain, so the pleasure becomes so much more. The whole movie is centered around that tension, where Julia is doing things she knows is wrong, but they feel good to her. And the more wrong it is, the better they start to feel, and she can't stop herself. That's what the movie is really getting at, is a fear of that loss of control to your own kind of base animal instincts.
Yeah, why could something that feels so right be so wrong, right, kind of deal? And the fact that she fell for the bad boy while actively engaged to the quote-unquote nice boy, that definitely added an extra element to it that it was wrong.
I mean, there's a few fears this is playing at that I think go a little deeper. There's the jump scares. This isn't really a jump scare movie. There's a few.
There was the first one.
There's a few that are effective.
Yeah.
Where, like, a dead body shows up here and there that you're not expecting.
Yeah.
But I feel like usually the fear is more, it's a thinky fear. So what you just brought up, she's falling for the bad boy. There's a fear there. There's this movie that I feel like a man and a woman could watch this movie and walk away with very different impressions. Mm-hmm. And it's, who are you afraid of becoming? Are you afraid of being Larry, where, you know, your wife is going to cheat on you with men who are more masculine, more aggressive, and more dangerous? Are you afraid of being Frank, where you become controlled totally by your own desires that eventually destroy you in the end because you can't control yourself? Or are you afraid of being Julia, where you're able to be manipulated by someone else using your own desires against you?
It almost felt like Julia's thing was that she felt like she had to do what was right versus what she wanted to do. She was stuck in her own system of oppression in a way. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a very thinking kind of movie in that regard of who
the worst. Frank and Julia relationship is the most interesting part. And that is a lot. You can chew on a lot of why do they keep, and you can understand why they would, because it feels good. They can't resist that pleasure, even when it comes to murder. And Julia is someone who was not an aggressive, violent person, but she comes to begin enjoying when she kills the first man she brings back to the house.
She has a breakdown.
Well, it's the tension. You can see her. It's in the acting. It's a tension between ecstasy and terror.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, ecstasy eventually wins out, and it's almost an erotic experience for her.
Yeah, she definitely, in the first kill was her hardest, and then the subsequent kills were all way better. The only time she draws the line was when Frank mentions bringing
in Larry.
He wants
to kill Larry, right.
Exactly.
That's his final kill. And she resists that for a while, but eventually
she gives in.
Because that's, of course, as if he's getting at it, succumbing to your own twisted desires. So that's kind of the Frank and Julia, which I think is the best part. We have to talk a little bit about the special effects in this movie. Because and we talk a lot about movies, say this one isn't that gory. This one is okay. This one's super gory. If you don't like gore effects, do not watch this movie. It goes all in. We've seen people literally get ripped apart by chains.
That was
several times.
That was in the first like 10 minutes too.
Yes, you see it a few times. It happens right away.
Yeah.
And the way that Frank in the attic gets reconstituted from being, you know, torn apart, and his body starts to reform. Very gory and very, it's a very 80s gore where this is right before kind of CGI became a thing. And so this is really the pinnacle, I think, of practical effects for this kind of thing, where it's a total practical. I don't know how they did it exactly with puppets and models and such.
The Frank puppet was good because
he has a few different stages. He has a stage where he's almost just pure skeleton being reformed, and then the muscle starts to reattach, and then where he's almost a zombie-esque, and then one where he's pretty much normal guy, but just with no skin. And each one of those transformations looks incredible. Definitely scary, but you can appreciate the work that went into this from the effects angle.
I think the final transformation, they just used the actor.
Yeah. Well, that's fun at the very end where he starts wearing his brother's skin, and it's the actor who plays the Larry character now gets to play the Frank character. Which is really fun. It's a little bit like that John Woo face-off movie, but a few years prior.
Exactly. Maybe that's where they got the idea from.
They may have. But that's a really fun moment. He's a good job.
Yeah.
He's a very good job of it. It's very creepy seeing him walk around and address, because Frank is such a creep, and Larry's very close with Kirstie. And by the time that happens, now Kirstie has become the center of the movie. Because by this point, we've seen Julia has descended all the way. So now the focus of the movie has shifted from Frank and Julia to Kirstie. And Kirstie's able to, she doesn't have the same issues Julia's having.
Yeah.
She's a little bit more of a static character.
The one thing the audience is keen on the issue that that's not Larry, because
Right. But Julia, not Julia, excuse me, Kirstie doesn't know that for a while. It's another like a Jaws where you see the bomb and the character doesn't.
yeah, and this part of the film, what the way you know it is because the camera angles pans back to the side of the face, and you can see where it looks like
You can
someone's
almost see where he's wearing the face.
exactly where someone took off the face from someone else and is now wearing it. So that one was very enticing to see just the effects of it.
Right. And the actor plays it in such a creepy way because this the Frank here's already a creep. And seeing him wearing the kind of the nice guy's skin and still being such a creep towards the girl who thinks this is my dad,
Yeah,
so chilling.
that was
So creepy.
so
Creepy on
wrong.
so many levels.
Especially because when he sees her, still as himself, he gets really pedophilic towards his
It does
niece.
feel like that, yeah.
And then once he's wearing her dad's
It just
face,
gets worse.
it just got
It just got
worse.
worse. So that's kind of the Frank. What we need
The
to talk about that we haven't even talked about yet is the Cenobites themselves, who are on the poster, and that's what people remember from this movie. They're a very small part of the movie. I think they maybe have 10 minutes tops of screen
Yeah.
time. So you see them very briefly at the very beginning, but only like their feet or the hems of their capes. You don't get a good look at them. And then you don't see them again until I think it's like 70 minutes into a 90-minute movie.
Yeah, when Julia solves the
Not
puzzle
Julia, Kirstie.
balls. So, sorry,
So Kirstie at
Kirsty's.
some point steals the puzzle. She finds Frank in the basement, not in the basement, the attic when he has no skin and confronts him and she steals the puzzle box. But then she passes out from the terror of my skinless uncle's in the attic and she ends up at the hospital with the box and she solves it. And once you solve the puzzle box, you summon the Cenobites who will then torture you to death.
A demon
But.
to some, angel to others.
And there's four Cenobites. So Pinhead is the leader. There is the female one who's. They've all were named kind of ironically by the cast and by the community. And Clive Barker hates all of these fun little names people gave them. He's like, no,
Really?
he wants Pinhead to be the Hell Priest. There are just the Cenobites. So there's the Chatterer who has kind of no face, he just has teeth and they always chatter. So he's called the Chatterer.
Yeah.
There's one who's a little portly and he's called Butterball. And there's a woman whose throat is kind of
Splayed
opened,
open.
it's splayed open right with some mechanical device. And she's called Deep Throat. She's probably the creepiest one.
I liked her character the most just because she didn't talk normally.
You can hear like the
Yeah.
strained wheezing coming from having
Yes.
her throat open. She's always poking at it too.
Yeah, exactly.
Cenobite, and then he has two more, and they look very cool. I mean, I don't know if cool is really the word, but it's a design that you want to keep looking at and keep finding new things. And the design is very intriguing,
It's very enticing.
scary too.
Well,
This is not one for the kiddos.
this is definitely not one for children. This movie is not for children. At all. Do not let them watch it. I remember when I was a child, Pinhead, I could see him in posters, no idea what the movie was about.
Yeah, you just see the poster. It scared me as a kid. Just the poster, or
The
seeing it in the
poster.
Blockbuster.
Yeah, because
That's a
when.
real throwback for Gen Z. They don't know what that is.
What's a poster? What's
Yeah.
Blockbuster? No, one of the things that I always. When I was a kid, I had no idea what Hellraiser was about. All I knew was that it included a monster with a lot of pins on his head, and that idea
Yeah.
alone was terrifying.
But I think seeing less of them, they become more effective. And I love, and then they're mad because Frank escaped them, and then you're not supposed to reconstitute yourself after they've tortured you to death. You're supposed to stay dead, is the kind of the
Yeah.
deal. So they're very mad at him, so she's eventually able to leave. Then there's a big confrontation between everyone in the house where you start seeing a lot of them, and she's able to escape
And seal them all back into the box.
until Hellraiser 2, The Quest for More Money.
Well.
But I think it's also, you don't explain too much about these Cenobites and where they come from, what their motivation is. You understand just enough to understand what happened to Frank and then how Kirstie's able to defeat them at the end. I think not having a lot of lore explained makes it scarier. I think as these sequels delved more into the lore of the Cenobites, they became worse.
Yeah, they became more blasé in a
Yeah.
way. But for this one, for the opening film, definitely different.
Yes, you can understand. I mean, the Alien franchise does this too, where at the beginning you know nothing about the Xenomorphs. By the end, you know way too much about the Xenomorphs.
Yeah, you know they're.
It's a pretty common Christian film.
And it keeps you enticed to want to know more for the sequels.
Right. The sequels then weren't as good as this first one. Because I think as the focus moved to the Cenobites, you lost what was intriguing, which is kind of Julia's descent into being the same kind of person Frank is by the end of the movie.
Yeah. But overall, I enjoyed it. It was different.
Yeah. And I actually enjoyed this more than I remember. By then it was like, oh, I ranked this too low. I should have ranked it higher. Just because I loved the character stuff was so intriguing. Seeing, I like a good horror movie where the characters don't grow. They descend. They become worse versions of themselves. I think that's a scary character because you can imagine how you could experience a similar descent into your own
madness.
Whatever problem is this. So in this one, it's being controlled by your own desires. I thought that was, it's a scary concept, something that you can sit and then scare you later on in a deeper way than just scary pin man jumped out from behind a wall and spooked me.
I also love that there's a good chase scene when Julia's in the hospital and she sees the first monster. I love a good chase scene.
Yeah.
So
there's also a good scene when Kirstie has learned that Frank has taken over my father's body. There's a pretty tense scene where she's trying to hide from him in the house. And then when she's trying to escape all the Cenobites at the end, it's also a pretty tense scene. Even though you can tell this is Clive Barker's first movie he directed, where again, the action isn't as, the staging isn't probably as good as something like Spielberg would do. You can tell he's the writer by trade, but it's, I think the trade-off you get by making it so much more focused on the characters is better.
Yeah.
I'd rather have that every time. I think movies, I think the director being the center point of every movie, I don't like that scheme. I think the writer, the guy who actually makes the story, should be the one who's credited more for this is his movie.
Yeah, and the more I kept looking at this film, the more I realized the entire film was sexual tension from start to finish. In the beginning,
I would say it's not tension. The tension's resolved.
I would say
a lot of modern movies kind of play around with a lot of, we're just going to build the sexual tension.
No.
The tension in this movie resolves like 5 minutes in, and it just sits in it the whole movie. And I think that's part of what draws you in too, because it's almost too much. Like, it overdoes it. But that's the world that Frank lives in, that Julia is being drawn into this whole film, where you just are swimming in it the whole time. You can't escape.
Yeah.
That's scary.
And because it goes from the tension in the beginning with Frank, then it wants Julia's flashbacks to the dinner party with Kirstie and her boyfriend on the table in front of her dad. And then just throughout, it just peppered in here and there. And it was like, damn, this whole movie is just sex.
Yeah. I also love the first time you see that flashback where she's reminiscing about her affair. This is also where Larry cuts himself on the nail. And right where you see them kind of finishing in their sex scene, that's when he cuts himself. So again, it's the interplay of pleasure and pain, which is really at the center of this whole movie.
Yeah.
Where one's enhancing the other.
Whew, I feel like I need a smoke break.
So that's Hellraiser. We'll throw these on our tier list at the end. We have one more to talk about. And that is, this is your movie. Why don't you tell us about it?
I want to be a little quiet about it. I don't want the lambs to scream.
Mm.
For that, it is Silence of the Lambs. A great movie, great time. And it came out in 1991.
This one's a little more modern than Hellraiser. Not the most modern that we've seen.
No.
Not as modern as Megan.
Megan.
But it definitely feels more modern than Jaws was.
Hannibal did not dance in this movie, and I'm very disappointed.
So tell us what this one's about.
This movie is a psychological thriller of a FBI detective trying to catch a serial murderer and trying to get the help of a known psychopathic psychiatrist who the FBI currently has in custody. And their relationship as it blossoms, if you can say that, and how with his tips and tricks here and there, she's able to finally solve the mystery and figure out who the serial murderer is and take him down.
Yeah, there's almost two movies in this movie. I had originally a note about how there's two antagonists and that kind of allows two movies to play out. But by the end of it, I felt it's almost more like there's two protagonists.
Yeah.
So Jodie Foster, this is a great cast, kind of top to bottom. Jodie Foster plays our main character, Clarice, who's this FBI agent. She's a trainee.
Yeah.
And she's trying to help catch this guy who's rampaging called Buffalo Bill. That's his serial killer name. And she's sent to, kind of unknowing to her that she's being sent to do this, she's sent to enlist the help of a serial killer who's already been captured, named Cannibal Lecter, played by Anthony Hopkins.
Or as commonly known, Hannibal the Cannibal.
Yes, because that's his thing. He likes to eat people. But he's also very erudite. He's very calm. He's just such a gentleman until he's not.
That's the scariest
And
part.
they do such a good job of sucking you in. He feels so charismatic and you want to keep watching him. And then he says something very crass.
Yeah.
Or he does something very violent later on in the movie. And it always is such a shock when he switches that mode like that. Such a great performance. A performance that you just want to see more of him on screen constantly. It's one of those iconic villains.
The way I felt about him is the way like some people have dangerous animals as pets, where they're calm until you get your face mauled.
Although it feels like everyone is Hannibal's pet.
Yes.
It feels like even though he's in the cell most of the time when he's talking to Clarice, he's always in control.
And especially when he gets moved to the secondary location,
He can move around a little more.
and he gets to move around, he looks like a caged cat for a circus. So it's very different, and I enjoyed his performance. His performance was creepy as hell.
There were a lot of shots when he's having these dialogues where he's in the one in the cell, but it's shot from inside the cell a lot of the time. So it looks like Clarice is the one in the cell. And it kind of creates this effect that as long as she's talking to him, he's always the one in control. 100%.
Well, you have to remember he's a trained psychiatrist,
Right.
so he knows how to get
He's a
in your
very
head.
good trained psychiatrist.
He's very maybe I should book an appointment.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's as he's in, she goes to visit him in this asylum, just talking a little bit about that contrast where you don't expect him to be this gentleman almost, where she's into the asylum to visit him the first time, and it feels a little bit like a realistic asylum, like you might imagine you would actually go visit. But as she starts going into the basements and the sub-basements and starting to be red and older, it feels like, okay, now we're in Arkham Asylum. We're gonna
Yeah.
go talk to the Joker. And she goes down kind of this murderer's row of the really deranged inmates, and they're getting one's worse than the other. And she gets to, yeah, there's this guy, nicely dressed, nice pictures he painted on the walls, just calmly standing there.
In a well-lit room.
Right. It's such a contrast. It's such a surprise. It really disarms you.
Everyone else's room was dingy. His was the most well-lit. I think it was even almost white walls.
Right. I don't think it has white walls, but he has his paintings on the
Paintings
wall.
on the wall,
Not
yeah.
really his sketches. They're very
It's
well done.
more homey in a way,
Right.
except for the fact that he is behind plexiglass where everyone else is behind bars.
And then when you finally see Hannibal do something violent, which isn't until well into the film, that's such a shock because it's so violent once he starts being violent.
That's when he really like puts you in a false sense of security.
Right.
He's really good
And he
at
does that,
that.
of course, to the characters in the movie as well, which helps him escape. So it's almost like there's the movie of Clarice trying to catch Buffalo Bill and Hannibal trying to escape.
Which is amazing how they were able to play off both of them and how
Yeah,
each of
there's
them.
an interplay between them, but it
Yeah.
does feel like there's two separate protagonists pursuing separate goals at the same time.
Especially when you find out, like, throughout the film that Hannibal knows who Buffalo Bill is, as he was an ex-patient of his. So that at any point in time, he could have definitely have told him, but he wanted to string them along
No, he
just.
doesn't know exactly who it is. He had a patient who was killed by Buffalo Bill. So
Ah.
he knows something about it, but he doesn't know exactly who it was. Or maybe he does. It's a little unclear
I
because
think
he
he
gives the police
does.
a fake, he gives them an accurate description, but a fake name at some point.
Yes, and which actually leads to an actual
Because he does lead Clarice to Buffalo Bill by the end. We talked a little about Buffalo Bill because that's another great performance. What really shocked me is there's a TV show I loved when I was a kid called Monk, which is about a detective in San Francisco. He's obsessive compulsive. He's a very kind of a damaged guy. And he needs everything to be neat and ordered. It's a fun show. It's very heartwarming. And the police captain is his character called Leland Stottlemyre. He's a very kind of a warm character. He could be, he can fight when he needs to, but he's a nice guy. And he also has a very iconic kind of accent. He has a voice that I recognize instantly. I watched it so much as a kid. Started watching this movie, we get the Buffalo Bills on screen. I'm like, hold on, I know that voice. It's the same guy. And that just shocked me that he had that range to pull that off.
It must have been extra shocking to see from a police captain to where he got
Yeah,
his
because
others.
Buffalo Bills is much more deranged. He's not like Hannibal, where he's a gentleman. Buffalo Bill is what you would expect. He's the more traditional serial killer. He kidnaps women from a parking lot, which is also something I know Ted Bundy used to do. So they definitely did their research to make that a little more realistic.
I think he was inspired by Ted Bundy when they
Maybe.
were writing
Maybe.
this film.
Yeah, I could definitely feel that, where this is meant to be a much dirtier serial killer. It's such a contrast between the Buffalo Bill and the Hannibal.
It
But it's very
is.
well acted. Just all around, the performances of this movie really make the movie.
Exactly. And just and then the final tension when the face off between Buffalo Bill and Clarice, that final tension
Yeah.
was really
I mean, the mystery as they
great.
solve it is pretty good, trying to track it down. It's not a mystery in the sense of like a whodunit, because we as the audience also, we know Buffalo Bill's the killer, and we see Buffalo Bill pretty early on. It's the trick of how does the FBI track him down and figure out actually where he is and rescue this woman he's kidnapped.
Who's the
And
daughter of a Tennessee senator?
right, and the investigation's pretty well done. One scene that really stuck with me from the investigation portion is the autopsy scene, where Clarice is seeing this dead body for the first time, and it's a great performance by Jodie Foster, where her reaction to it feels so real, where she's trying to fight back the disgust, and she has to go get some water. And I also loved how they smear the little cream under their noses; they don't have to smell it as much. That was a great scene that really stuck with me.
That part, especially her flashbacks that she's reminiscing about her childhood, peppered in, and how Hannibal really like digs into them.
Yeah, as you start through her sessions with Hannibal, you start to understand Clarice. Everyone in this movie kind of always has alternative motives. They're always trying to get at something else by doing what they're actually doing in the movie. Even Buffalo Bill is not just killing to kill, he's killing because he kind of covets. The Hannibal's explanation is he covets women. He's trying to make well, I won't spoil that, but that's there's a whole thing with him.
Well, the idea throughout
And
this film is just coveting
everyone covets something. Hannibal's coveting
freedom.
freedom. Clarice isn't really trying to solve justice for her own sake. She has the traumatic incident that she talks about with Hannibal at the end, and she's trying to kind of address that unaddressed trauma by being a detective and solving crimes.
Well, she also covets becoming a full-time agent and working specifically in the
Yeah.
psychiatrist side of things and the behavioral science
Right,
services.
right, right. And even her boss, I mean, he covets a lot. Hannibal alleges he kind of covets Clarice.
Yes.
And he also sends Clarice to talk to Hannibal, but he doesn't tell her you're going to enlist Hannibal's help on this case, even though he knows that's what's going to happen. I love that he set those wheels into motion. Because he's the one who actually caught Hannibal in the first place. You can see, even though they never interact, you can see this is a character who actually knows. He's the only one who understands what they're dealing with Hannibal in the whole film.
And Hannibal's actual psychiatrist covets fame and
Yes.
notoriety.
And he does not know what he's dealing with.
He no
No, he
the
plays way too fast and loose with it. Something that you need to talk about in this movie that's such a strong theme, and I think is really well done, is there is a whole kind of sexism feminist angle going on with Clarice. And it's not done in a really in your face way. Like, she never stands up and is like, men won't
Stop.
let me do this, but I'm going to do it anyways, and I'm a strong woman. It's not that obnoxious version. It feels so much more real, where to just people expect different things from her, people treat her differently.
Is she
Physically, she's smaller than
smaller?
everyone
You
else.
could definitely see that in the first couple scenes when she enters the elevator and is the only woman in
They
there,
really lay that on.
and everyone's almost feels like they're a foot taller than her.
What was interesting is that I had a note about that scene where she steps into the elevator and it really accents, look, she's surrounded by men and FBI training. She's pretty much the only, she has one friend who's also a woman. But then she walks down the hallway. She walks past a secretary, or it looks more like a secretary than an agent, but it's another one. Maybe I'm the one being sexist now. But the
Perhaps.
woman she walks by is about a foot or two taller than Jodie Foster. And she just seems small in general. So now I'm thinking, they're just saying, we're trying to think, oh, she has something to prove, which I think she does.
Then
But
the way that.
also we're saying, are you saying the audience, stay, you should want to protect this woman who's small and kind of gentle in this harsh world. And I think that is also something that plays into Hannibal's impression of her.
Perhaps, maybe also it could be the fact that she feels small, so they personify her by looking, making her look even smaller with everyone around
Yeah, I think
her.
she does. But I really like, because it's something that happens a lot where situations she's in. At some point, her kind of the lead investigator apologizes. Hey, I just told him that we can't discuss the body with a woman around because I just wanted him out of the way. I didn't really mean it. She kind of just takes it in stride, and because he never has that moment that you see in a more obnoxious movie, the big confrontation about it. It's just something. It's a fact of life. And I feel like it's so much more well done here than in other movies. It's so much more impactful
Well, you
because
got
of
to
it.
remember, this is 1991, and that whole idea of like I Am Woman, Hit Me, Roar kind of way was not really done as much.
Yeah.
It's that's more
I
of
think
a
rarely is it,
post-2000s
but rarely is
thing.
it done better than in this movie.
Yeah, she understood that, especially because a lot of these investigations took place in a small town. She realized I'm not going to change these people's mind in like the 5 seconds that I see them. So she just kind of took it in stride.
What's interesting about her being a woman is also it saves her at the end of the movie where she's found Buffalo Bill's lair and she's down there with him and he turns the light up. And the way that he kidnaps women in the beginning is he has these night vision goggles and he has them on now and it's pitch black. Clarice can't see him, but he can see her and he has a gun.
They
So he
both have
could,
guns. They
they both
both.
do, but she doesn't know where he is and he knows exactly where she is and he could just shoot her. And if she was a man, he almost certainly would. But because he has this thing about coveting women, he has to touch her. He has to reach out for her because he can't stop coveting. So he doesn't just shoot. And because he reaches out, now Clarice knows where she is. Now she can return fire. And that's how she survived. So if she was a man, she would not have
That.
survived.
Yeah, she finds out where he is once he cocks the gun. Once he does that, she hears it, she
Yeah.
knows
But
where he is.
there's that whole phase before that where he's just reaching at
Reaching
her in the
out, yeah,
dark.
that was just
Right.
so creepy.
But also, if that wasn't there, he would have just killed her.
Exactly.
So it's just interesting. It's something you could just sit with and think about. It doesn't really answer it. It just kind of raises life. It's just how the world is. I really like that about this movie. Now, just like Jaws, I have to say this isn't in my top 20 because I don't consider it a horror film. I think it's a thriller and it's a bit of a mystery movie. It has definitely horror elements. When Hannibal has his breakout, I mean, it definitely gets gory. Again, not a good kids movie. Definitely some strong gore in this one. But is it enough to make me think this is a horror movie? No.
Terrible. Terrible.
Why do you say this is horror?
This is horror because I guess because it's horror that could potentially happen. It's the idea of serial killers. We have serial killers in real life that this
Yeah.
has happened. This is inspired by serial
The
killers.
Buffalo Bill feels very like a real serial killer.
Exactly. So the fact that it's a realistic fiction versus the other ones that just feel straight up fiction. This has the element of, oh, this could happen. I could end up in someone's basement hole thing.
Yeah.
So
Getting the
that,
hose again.
and get the hose again unless you put the lotion on. So that idea of this could happen is what really lends the horror for it to me.
So it seems like if there's any horror element in a movie, you're willing to consider it a horror movie. You don't seem to need to have genre convention.
No, I don't.
Okay.
Is it?
I
It
think that's
does.
interesting. For me, I need it to be a horror movie. It needs to be kind of start to finish. This is what it is.
I guess this is what we're. Well, it's good that we have differing views
Yeah,
on
it's
it.
creating a very different list. Because if I consider this a horror movie, I would have put this definitely on my list. I would not have put it this low. I would put it much higher.
Oh, we'll find out why I put it
So,
lower.
okay. We'll see in the next few movies. But I'm gonna harass you about this going forward.
No.
All right, this
I
is your movie. I'll give you the final word.
love this movie. Hannibal just likes to have people for
So
dinner.
iconic. I mean, when you see that scene of her interviewing him, it's been imitated in so many other movies. But because it's so good, it doesn't have that scary movie effect where you just want to laugh now. It's
Yeah.
still so effective.
I love the fact that the actors didn't interact with each other a lot between takes. So when Jodie Foster first hears Anthony Hopkins' little noise that he does with his like slithering sound, she was legitimately terrified of him.
I was literally terrified of that slithering sound.
So it's a great film.
Yeah,
I
if
love
you
it.
haven't seen this one, definitely go out and give it a watch. I would say
Yeah.
it definitely has some gore elements, but even if you don't like that, if you just love a good movie, they're brief. They're brief. So I think it's worth seeing, and you can close your eyes for that little bit.
And if your psychiatrist lecturer ever invites you for dinner, kindly decline.
So I think that's it. That's it for all our content for this episode.
Yeah.
So looking forward, we
No,
have.
we still have to figure out where does it
Oh,
go?
the tier list. You have the tier
The
list
tier
open.
list.
As
Exactly.
Alvaro gets the tier list open, I'll give you a little preview of some of our coming attractions. So we did record a little bonus discussion that we're releasing later this month on the topic of do mazes at Horror Nights need to be scary to be a good maze? Because that's been something that's been a bit, it's been controversial online, we've been noticing. So we had thoughts and recorded a little micro conversation. So it'll be a little bonus episode coming out this month. We're also going to be at Midsummer Scream in Long Beach at the end of July. We'll be there on Saturday and Sunday. And there is always a Halloween Horror Nights panel that Marty attends where he breaks down one of the mazes. So we'll be able to give you updates from that, as well as any other, fun Halloween events going on at that time. And of course, we'll be with you again in June as well. I don't think we have a set topic for the episode yet, but hopefully by then, I think we'll see the tickets will drop. And we should have a major announced by then, hopefully. So we'll be able to break down, as we mentioned earlier, what ticket is right for you based on what kind of experience you want to have and how much of a fan you are of the event. And if we do get the maze announcement, of course, we'll talk about what we want to see in the maze, and we'll probably watch a movie related to it and give you a little movie review as well. So, keep subscribed, keep your eye on this space, and let's talk now about our rankings, which now been pulled up.
Yes. So we
So
still.
again, if this is your first episode, every time we watch a movie, we put it into our tier list. We have S, A, B, C, and Black Christmas tier, which is the bottom tier, because we did not like Black Christmas.
Which was the first one we saw, I believe.
It was. I think that's the first one we reviewed, and it was what a way to start.
Starting from the bottom, now we're here.
So let's start at Jaws. So after seeing this one again, I don't know if you've seen it recently before you rewatched it.
No, I think it was I was focusing more on nostalgia.
So yeah, I also had that experience of I liked it better earlier, and I don't
Yeah,
know what's changed, but
I think
this
we've gotten
rewatch
older.
did not liked. Good movie, great score. Did not love. Where do you want to put it?
I think I want to put it around C, close to
I
Megan.
was thinking around Megan too.
Yeah.
It feels wrong to put it to Megan because this is such an iconic movie and it's such an important moment in film history. So maybe put it at the bottom of B. Just give it some points for that.
So, last one on B.
Like the very bottom of B.
Okay, I'll put
Yeah.
that after Saw then.
Because in a way, if Jaws didn't exist, Silence of the Lambs wouldn't exist. Hellraiser wouldn't exist,
They
just because
won.
it changed the way people thought about movies. And it needs to get some credit for that. And whenever you're doing something new for the first time, I think you need to have a little allowance for you don't get it perfect.
Especially, yeah. All right, so that's Jaws. Now for your 18th Hellraiser, 17th Hellraiser.
Hellraiser, I don't want to put it in S, but I do want to put it in the top of A.
I don't know. I feel like it belongs around B, around Texas Chainsaw.
Oh, it's much better than Texas Chainsaw. Texas Chainsaw has no characters at all.
Are you talking about running?
Is
There's a lot of running in this film.
there a lot of running in Hellraiser?
No, only Kirstie.
Kirstie runs just a tiny bit,
Tiny
but not a
bit.
lot of running. A lot of running. Texas Chainsaw is good because of the atmosphere it creates and some of the horror imagery that stays with you. But Hellraiser is great because of the characters and the descent. And the way it's told and the design has a lot more going on than Texas Chainsaw.
I'll give you that. And it's around the same time as all the other interesting films that come out from that time period.
I won't accept lower than A.
I'll put it below Gremlins.
It's above Gremlins. Gremlins
No,
also has no character work at all.
Gremlins is great. I love the Gremlins. Each
Gremlins
Gremlin
are
had
cute.
character.
I feel like the cuteness of the Gremlins is canceled out by the creepiness of the Cenobites, and then the actual story and characters of the Hellraiser are better than those in Gremlins.
I'm pretty sure if Cenobites and Gremlins were to go toe-to-toe, Gremlins would win.
I would agree, but if we're just this isn't a tier list based on who would win. I
It
would agree. Pinhead wouldn't know not to get Gizmo wet. It would be a problem.
Yeah. All right, fine.
All right, we'll put it there.
I'll put it between Scream and Gremlins then.
Okay. I disagree, but I can accept that this is a middle ground. We'll compromise.
Okay, and now Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs for me would be S. This would be an S-tier movie. This is a really
Yeah.
fantastic, great, iconic movie. It's just weird you ranked it so low.
There's been more films that I've seen since then, and even though, yes, it's a very great film, I
I'm going to
feel
tell you
like
the
other
next
films.
16 films you have are not going to be S. But this is, I feel this is an S rank movie. It might be the bottom of S for me. But
Well, there's no bottom if it's the only
this is a
one.
movie that I would say everyone should watch. No matter who you are, no matter what you like, everyone should watch this movie and you're gonna love it.
Once you're of a decent age, maybe around
Well, yeah, you should be old enough.
18.
Yeah, you should be old enough to watch an R-rated movie.
Exactly. So, but
But
yeah,
just because the characters, the acting is so good. We didn't even talk about the score by Howard Shore, who also did The Lord of the Rings, so good. Everything about this just works.
the slithering. Oh, so kind of, I can hear it in my head when I
Yeah.
close my
There's
eyes.
a reason that this has been imitated so many times.
All right. Well,
All right.
I
Well, we
think
have Science Slams at S. We have our first S-tier movie.
exactly.
So we hope you've enjoyed this episode. We'll leave you with the outro.
Stay scared out there.
Thank you for listening to this production of the Hollywood Horror Nerds. We know you have many options for your listening entertainment, and we're glad you chose us. Find us on Instagram at Hollywood Horror Nerds, on X at HW Horror Nerds, and on YouTube at Hollywood Horror Nerds. You can also email us questions or comments directly at our Gmail account, HollywoodHorrorNerds@gmail.com, and we'll read them on the air. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite alternative podcast site to ensure you don't miss next month's episode. And until then, stay scared out there.